want to say you're the reason that I'm attempting to become a writer.
All right.
And well, this is my absolute favorite book that you've written.
That's one of the fans who greeted Bill Bryson at the Boston Book Festival earlier this year to hear the author talk about his latest work, At Home, A Short History of Private Life. The crowd lined up to get their book signed and filled an auditorium to hear him speak. But as Bill Bryson told the audience, it wasn't always that way.
It really wasn't that long ago that I did a reading to an audience of five at a Barnes & Noble in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and they only put out six chairs. So this is absolutely true. The five people who came, one was the manager of the bookstore. Two others were friends of my parents who had retired to Pennsylvania. The fourth person was a guy who was also named Bill Bryson, who had come all the way from some far-off place just so that we could stand together and look in amazement at his driver's license. And the fifth person was his wife, who didn't seem to want to be with any Bill Brysons that day.
What a difference a few bestsellers make. And fans brought them all, from A Walk in the Woods, Bryson's quirky tale of his misadventures on the Appalachian Trail, to At Home, a journey through the Victorian rectory of Norfolk, England, where Bryson and his family live now. At Home is a detailed history. Entering the bathroom brings a lesson on hygiene. In the kitchen, a discourse on nutrition, food preservation, and the spice trade. Bryson thoroughly researched engineering, architecture, horticulture, as well as social mores. And he writes in the engaging everyman style that devotees have come to expect. This is, after all, the man who wrote A Short History of Nearly Everything. Here and Now producer Emiko Tamagawa sat down with Bill Bryson to talk about his work.
When you were writing A Walk in the Woods, you talked about the fact that part of the reason why you wrote it was because you just moved to New Hampshire, and part of the way to reacquaint yourself with America was to walk the Appalachian Trail. And I'm wondering, with this book, is researching all the aspects of this particular rectory that was your home a way to sort of get you back into England?
It did have that effect, but that wasn't the design of it. And even less was there any interest on my part at the outset to get into the history of my own house. I was using my house simply as a convenience, as a sort of floor plan that would allow me to go from room to room. It's my house. I have permission to go wherever I want. I can look in the cupboards. And I did present a certain problem because my wife and I are actually very private people, and we didn't really want to share our private life with people. So there's nothing in the book at all about our living in the house. Instead, I was using the guy who built the house, a man named Reverend Thomas Marsham, a rector in the Church of England in the mid-19th century. And he built the house, and I use him as the kind of device by which we connect. We go from that house, from that very specific person and house, out into the wider world, more universally looking at houses.
Throughout all your earlier works, there's this time that you sort of go and explore something that you've come across. You're in the middle of Australia and you see a museum and you decide to walk in and just check out the show. Or when you're in Pennsylvania with the Appalachian Trail, you decide to explore a town that's apparently been on fire for forever. I mean, is there just something about the way that your mind works that you just have to go and see why things are what they are?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, how could you be in Pennsylvania and hear that there's a town, 5 miles away that's been on fire for 50 years? How could you not go and see it, I mean, I love that sense of discovery. I'm not an adventurous traveler. I don't like lying down and sleeping on hard floors and getting malaria and doing all those things that real travelers do. But the one thing I do have in common with real travelers is I am really curious to find out what's around the corner, what's over the next hill.
You also have the capacity to do lots and lots of research into very, very small details. I was finding out things, that didn't occur to me, like the fact that Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, but what was actually even more impressive was that he managed to install the infrastructure so people could use electricity. How much fun is that, to be able to research all that kind of stuff?
It is really the greatest self-indulgence of the world. I mean, I loved it, and what I found really hard was, where do I, stop? Somebody take this pen away from me, because I'm just taking notes and way too many things. And with the thing I remember as being just completely amazed about was Thomas Edison didn't invent the incandescent light bulb. An Englishman named William Grove invented, perfectly good electric light. It's just they didn't have filaments that worked very well, so they burn out very quickly. They weren't a practical commercial proposition. So what Edison did, as you say, he kind of finished off the business of getting the light to work, but what his real genius was for was was organizing systems, because it's no good having a working light bulb if you don't have people to sell it to. I mean, you need to have, you know, generating capacity, you need to have wires all over the place, you need to have a demand from a big public. And that is really the genius of any really successful person. It's not inventing the product, it's generating the demand for the product.
I have to ask you, though, about one thing that I sort of noticed when I was reading A Walk in the Woods. One of the things I carry with me are the details of bear attacks and their causes. When I was reading your Australia book, In a Sunburned Country, I carried away jellyfish and how awful they can be and how awful those things can be, and I believe snakes. And then when I was reading this book, I was reading about, okay, the most dangerous place in the house is the stairs. You do have this amazing ability to illuminate really horrifying and gross details.
Well, yeah, but it's not just me. I mean, it's in anything. If you think about a movie like Jaws, I mean, you don't recall the warm family relationship of Roy Scheider and his wife and kid. What you remember is people being dismembered by a very angry shark. So it's not as if I'm exactly dwelling on those things in the book, but those are the things that people hang on to, and particularly you with an obviously morbid character have really grasped onto it.
One thing I did want to ask you, though, is that something that you said to me, you know, before we started, was that there were things in researching this that you had to leave out in order, because this book is so comprehensive.
There were lots and lots of things. If you just were looking at cooking, you would need hundreds of thousands of words, and I had 10,000. So what I had to do was be very selective, and I ended up looking not really at the history of cooking, but the history of keeping food safe, and you know, how do we present food so that it doesn't spoil? And the solutions to those problems, which mostly came in the 19th century, about the time our old rectory was being built, the solutions to those really transformed the world and were a very significant part of making the modern world.
Right, and things like, you know, how ice changed the world and the fact that vitamins and the idea of vitamins is only like 100 years old. I mean, these are all things. I love the fact about this book because I think that for years to come, if people ask me, I was just going to come up with trivia that I will have remembered from this book, though I won't remember that I read it here. I just will remember it, which is a wonderful thing. But where do you go next?
I'm going to have some time off. I mean, I've really, really promised myself that. I very much enjoy the work I do. But for the time I'm working on a book, it means that I'm completely obsessed with it. I mean, all the reading I've done for the last 5 years has been about social histories and domestic life and things that were germane to this book. And, I mean, I don't resent that at all because I was very, very interested in those subjects. But I haven't done any real reading for pleasure for about 5 years. And so one of the things I promised myself as I was coming to the end of this book, something to look forward to, was that I was going to do some just completely unstructured, unfocused, random, pleasurable reading.
Okay, I just have to ask this. Is there anything in particular that's on your night table for this time?
Somebody, a good friend of mine in England, gave me a trilogy of by Robertson Davies, a Canadian novelist, who a lot of people just absolutely swear by, say it's the best thing ever. The problem is with trying to read a book on a book tour is you're so tired all the time, I read about three sentences and pass out. But I'm going back to England in a day or so, and I'm going to just park myself in front of a fire and read for a while.
Author Bill Bryson speaking with Here and Now's Emiko Tamagawa about his latest book, At Home, A Short History of Private Life. To see a videotape of his appearance with fellow writer Tony Hiss and Robin Young at the Boston Book Festival, go to our website, hereandnow.org. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Monica Brady-Meyerov. Join us again here and now.